Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Millennial Gaming Speak podcast for the week of May 8th, 2017. I am your host, Logan Moore, and with me this week is the recently graduated Max Roberts. Hey, Max.
That is a true fact. I am recently graduated. I still prefer, as always, Max Roberts.
I still said that, didn't I?
Nope. You said, with me this week is the recently graduated Max Roberts.
Well, I get to change it up because I'm host boy.
Ugh.
How was that for you, graduating?
It was long. Feels good, though. Weight off my shoulders. I'm done.
Do you have a job yet? Or are you a bum? Are you living off the government?
I'm not living off the government yet. I don't have food stamps. I did spend a bulk of my day watching documentaries and then went to a meeting with a wedding coordinator. And that's kind of what I did today. I off to a great start with not having to go to school, which is nice. I mean, oh goodness. Computer settings. Boom. Now my screen's not as dark. But it should be a little
brighter. So school. No more school.
No more school for a long time. I'm excited about it.
I'm going to say ever. I'm going to take a wild guess and say probably not ever again, unless you get into teaching or something like that. Or, well, you're marrying a teacher, so you'll be very much around it.
A lot of people lately have been telling me that I should be a teacher. And I'm like, should I? I don't know. I would want to teach college level because they're hopefully smart people that can have intelligent conversations and you can create the coursework yourself. You're not bound specifically to a book or curriculum established by the government. Problem with that is you need at least a master's. And so, do I want to get a master's? Do I?
What would you get a master's in?
Anything I want.
English?
I could get a master's in English, history, philosophy, writing, creative writing.
I feel like English would make more sense for teaching purposes.
Would I teach English? I don't have to teach English. I could teach history.
Why would you do that? You have a journalism degree.
I do like history. Loved history as a kid.
You mix it up. You just mix your major up when you get to the master's program.
I can do whatever. I could, if I'm accepted into graduate school, I could get a master's in jazz music. I have no musical talent whatsoever, but I could pursue it. They don't care.
Probably shouldn't do that. I have no intentions of going to graduate school whatsoever. Once I'm done, I'm done. And I'm out, and I think not ever paying another dime for education, at least not in that formal sense.
I don't know. I think like I could maybe one day, but right now, I'm not going back to school for a good long while.
Yeah, but then you get into that professional student type area where it's like you're just going to school to go to school. I know a couple people who have done that, and it's like, are you going to just like start working at some point? And they're like, nah, I'm going back to school again for my second double master graduate program thing.
No, I wouldn't just be perpetually in school. No, that would never be my goal, is just to be a student forever. The goal would be to get some sort of degree that lets me do a different job that I would want to do.
Yeah. No, for sure.
I will not be a student forever. That would be awful. It would be a nightmare.
But I'm ready to be done.
At least a student in the traditional sense. I'm down to learn from people and work experience and all that kind of mentorships and stuff, but not in the traditional sense.
Still waiting for a grade. Well, what have you been learning from video games that you have been playing?
Nice segue.
I assume.
I like that. That was really good. I haven't played anything. You know, nope, that's not true. I played a lot of Downwell on my phone during both graduation ceremonies. So I've been into Downwell so much, actually, that I bought it on PlayStation and have yet to play it on PlayStation. Been playing Downwell a lot, which is a very cool, I guess, kind of roguelike. Like, the level changes each time, but the mechanics are the same. It's one of those mechanic-driven games.
Hadn't you played it before already? I thought you had.
Yeah. I own it. I have it on my phone kind of just forever, and sometimes I get in the mood, you know, I'm trying to kill some sort of time, and you know, the puzzle games on my phone I'm not in the mood for that, or a word game, so like Downwell's there for some sort of action platforming kind of stuff. And that's a really cool game. I'm excited for their next game, which is called Minit, and it's MINIT, I think is how they spell it. It's like that You have 1 minute to explore the overworld. It's kind of Zelda-like, but it's cool. They make cool games. Downwell's fun. It's kind of really all I've been playing.
Nothing else? So you've got all this time off school now. No games. I mean,
from Thursday last week to yesterday, I've been packed with graduation stuff. Like, I haven't had any time to myself.
Did you get a bunch of money for graduating?
A bunch? I mean...
Any?
Yeah, I got money, yeah.
More or less than high school?
Less. Way less. Abby and I combined is less than I got for high school.
Okay. I was curious about that.
I mean, I my parents told me what they're getting me for my graduation, but it's going to be a few months now. From they're going to buy
waterbed?
Yep, I'm getting a waterbed, which I've always wanted. These kids across the street.
Are they getting you a new Mac, new computer, probably?
Yeah, they're buying me a. They're gonna buy me a MacBook Pro. So.
Oh great, good gravy! Which one? The new one with the fancy slidey emoji bar up top?
Yeah, I mean whatever the new version will be this fall winter. Yes.
Jeez, that'll be expensive.
Yeah, it's pretty
expensive. That'll be like $3,000 or something like that.
We're looking at right now is like $3,500.
Holy crap. But that comes with
Final Cut.
Nothing justifying that price at all. Like, I will say that. $3,500 for a computer is insane.
It really is.
Especially one
new computer too.
Especially one, and I love Mac too, but like that's such an outrageous price for not having like hefty processing power. Like, you could go build your own PC for like $1,500 maybe, and get like.
I have a spreadsheet with everything if I were to build a PC in it, and that's probably that was maybe 8 months ago, so that's probably outdated. I wouldn't say it's not adequate processing power. It's, I think, the 6th gen i7s, and there's the new update will have the Kaby Lake in it this year. So I mean, it will have the top processor available. So. But you're absolutely right. Like,
I mean, in terms of raw power, I mean, I don't know internal language at all.
If you were to take the MacBook Pro top specs and then just throw the same exact specs into a laptop, it would not be as much. Like, chop a grand off of it.
Probably. No, it's not.
You are paying for the logo and the OS and everything, and I'm in too deep and with everything I use. So. I don't think
you're ever in too deep to drop another. And see, this is what I'm trying to figure out. You and I texted about this the other day, but I mean, I don't know. There comes a point where it's like, huh, I'm paying like $2,000 more than I probably need to for what? Convenience? Like, it's like a $2,000 extra convenience charge, all things considered.
I'd say it's closer to $1,500, but yeah, it's not so much the
convenience/familiarity. That's what you're paying for.
It's also the ecosystem I've invested in. I have spent hundreds of dollars on apps, both on the computer and my phone, that all work seamlessly together. I've got the watch. I've got the phone.
So none of those would work on PC? Like, you brought up iTunes. I'm like, dude, iTunes works pretty well on PC. It does, but iTunes
is like bottom of the totem pole there. I use Final Cut Pro, which is like the biggest, most obvious example. I use my email client is specific.
You still have
the
subscription to Adobe though, right?
I do, yeah.
And Twitter, I mean, that's
my
just Twitter
app.
I know you love Tweetbot or whatever.
I'm hopelessly addicted though. Yeah. It's like probably Michael with his craft beers. Like, he knows what he likes and he pursues it and tries new things and all that jazz.
I know, but when you say you're paying like over a grand more for apps involving Twitter, it's just kind of funny. I mean, again, you're not paying for any of this. Like, if your parents drop all the money, then you're very lucky.
They're buying the computer, and that's awesome, and very grateful for that down the line whenever that happens. But anyway, yeah, like everything I've bought is I'm in too deep. But you, on the other hand, if you want to, you could get out. You're not in deep enough.
Yeah, like, I really like Mac more for the operating system more than I do, like, oh, hey, I have a Mac. Ha, ha, ha. Like, I just hate Windows. Like, that's the main reason it's why I would want to stick with Matt.
And I looked, like, I don't know if you saw, but they just had a press conference last week and revealed some new education stuff. It was pretty cool, but they revealed a new laptop. And really, last year and maybe even a little bit the year before, like, Microsoft's been getting in the hardware side of computers, and they've been making some really nice, at least looking things. And some of the specs are nice. And I do think it's kind of funny. A lot of people hate on Macs for their price, but if you go look at the top of the line Surface laptops, they cost just as much as a MacBook Pro. I was like, oh, but it's a Windows. But anyway, they announced a Surface laptop, and it's a gorgeous computer. It's nice looking. But then you read about the inside.
Can you hear me?
No, I didn't. You've totally disappeared.
Because if you can, you need to knock. You need to move. You need to turn your camera off.
What?
You can hear me.
I can
turn your camera off. You're coming in horrible on my end. Like, I couldn't. I didn't hear any of that.
Oh well, I could hear. I can hear you. Okay.
Can you still see me? All right.
Yeah, I see you. Just I saw you fine the whole time.
Technical difficulty.
Now you're frozen. Now you're not. I'll turn it down. I'll turn it off. It's fine. You're just going to see my picture now.
Okay. Okay, I think we're good now.
Okay.
Talk.
All right, I don't even remember what I was saying. But anyway, their new computer is kind of... It looks really nice.
I mean, it's recording on your end. Games.
Yeah, that's what you should... What have you been playing? You finished Kingdom Hearts 2.
Kingdom Hearts 2... I'm really worried that I'm coming in bad on your end, so I'm actually going to start recording on.
You sound perfect.
That's fine. That's fine. I'm just going to start one up on my end as well. Kingdom Hearts 2. I finished that. Awesome. Still the best one in the series. My biggest complaint with that, going back to it, is how close each of the worlds follows the actual story from the movies. So with like Mulan, it's pretty much the same story. You go up to the top, that everybody charges down, and you see that whatever the dude's name is still alive, and you rush back to the castle or whatever. Same thing that happens in the movie. Pirates of the Caribbean is really similar to the movie. Like, those plots aren't different from their movie counterparts, and that kind of sucks. Gameplay wise, though, it's still easily the best in the series. The one thing I will say, though, is that the magic system blows in that game, and you're right, and I totally forgot how that magic system worked, but it is not good. However, I will say that here's my thing with it. It's needed, because if you could utilize magic in that game the same way you could in Kingdom Hearts 1, then you would never die. Like, it's...
I mean, did you die magic anyway? System in that,
a couple times, yeah.
Were you like, playing on there, Proud? Or Critical?
I was playing on Proud, yeah. Not okay. Critical. That's the hardest. There's a couple tough points to that game. None of them are too bad, though. But the magic system sucks, but I think it needs to be like that. Otherwise, you would never die, ever. Like, even if they bump the difficulty up, like, you feel so much stronger in that game compared to the first one. And I think that magic system, only being able to use cure that one time and then waiting for the cooldown, I think that in turn does kind of like level things out a little bit more. The other thing I'll say too, and I texted you about this, I think you blow the reaction commands like way out of the water. Like, you use them a decent amount in the game, but the only time I really felt like you use them a lot is that final fight against Xemnas.
Where you just mash triangle?
No, you don't even mash triangle. Well, you do when he hits you up into the air, and then you do those reversals. Other than that, you don't really use it, except for when he then shoots all those lasers at you. There's like two or three instances in that final fight where you
that
will have to use triangle
really
a lot.
Cool.
It does look really cool, and that's why I'm fine with it as well. Other than that, I really don't think the reaction commands are used like to an insane degree, like you've always made it seem. And when they are used, it's when you catch an enemy off guard in a certain way, or in the case of like
the end
big
of
bulky heartless at the end of a combo or something like
which
that.
Is
like, they use it in ways that make sense. It's not just like there's a couple parts in the game, like when you have to kill the thousand heartless in the middle of that canyon, that is clearly just an opportunity for you to spam that, and that they're openly showcasing that for you. There's a couple instances, but overall, like, I really didn't think it was misused.
But there's no strategy behind it. It's just mash X until you can hit triangle. It's like God of War, kind of. Like, mash square until you can hit triangle.
I mean, I don't... I actually think there is some strategy to it at times. Like, because sometimes it would prompt me to do it, and it's like, I'd rather just finish this guy off with a combo than do that or something like that.
User choice.
So you don't have to do it every time.
But it's there. It's kind of... I think the better version and what it did evolve into is what you see in Birth by Sleep and Dream Drop Distance and Point 2 is the command styles where, like, if you use, say you use like 3 blizzard attacks in a row, then you'll get like this blizzard command style that deals a lot of ice damage. Like, that's the evolution of it, where then it's strategy, where you're building your attacks up to create a certain command style to execute certain attacks to kill the heartless that may be weak to that or something. Like,
no, I get that and I know it's like not a perfect system either, I'm not saying that, but going in, like, throughout the course of the show, like, anytime we ever brought that game up and I was like, Kingdom Hearts 2, that's my favorite, the first thing you always say immediately is reaction commands.
That and Magic, I think it is blown out of proportion. That and Magic are my biggest issues with that game.
But it's such, I really think you blew it way out of proportion. Like, playing over it with a set of fresh eyes, like, I was looking for that. I was honestly going out of my way to see if they were
using it. It was like Max was on your shoulder going, these things are awful. And then the analytical Logan, who's actually level-headed and makes sense, is like, do these suck as bad as he says? And then Max is like, yeah.
I just really didn't feel like it was, like, overused or anything. And that's your thing, is you always said it was just a constant thing. I really didn't think it happened, but maybe once per battle. And also, it usually typically only happens when you're fighting nobodies. What's the base level nobody?
You use the reversal and, like, slide behind him and then slash him. That was a cool animation.
But I never use that on those. Like, that's one of the only one. That's the only nobody type where it's really, like, constantly present. Other than that, 50%, that game's kind of split into halves, where the first half is all fighting heartless and the second half is fighting mainly nobodies. That first half with the heartless, it's really, I don't want to say rare, but it's not, you don't see it that often during the clashes you have with the heartless. It's way more frequent with the nobodies, for sure. But then again, that's like the last portion of the game.
You beat it. You're done. Are you going to do the post game? Are you going to fight the other members? Are you going to fight Roxas? Are you going to, like, seek out Ultima? Or are you done? Roxas? No, I thought there was the big, you could fight Roxas at the end, like the super hard one, or maybe that's, who's that final bonus boss? Like,
I didn't know you could fight Roxas again. Unless it's in that cave, which they added. Well, there's a bunch of stuff they added
to the final mix
that I never saw.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, that cave of remembrance, I never knew about that.
Yeah. The
addition of Terra to go fight him.
Are you going to do any of that?
I tried to, and I died in one swing.
Yeah.
So
that's how it goes.
There would be too much grinding. I mean, I'd have to just do. Wait, I mean, I don't know. I may go back to it. I'd like to get Ultima Weapon. The thing is, there's not many interesting trophies. Like, as weird as that sounds, you know how I always look for that stuff. There's a bunch of pretty good post-game trophies for Kingdom Hearts 1. There's not as many for Kingdom Hearts 2. Like, I was expecting there to be, like, some for getting Ultima Weapon or something like that, and there really isn't. So that's kind of pushed me away from it. I don't know, my save file's still there. I don't feel like I need to go back to it anytime soon.
Will you touch? I know we've said before you won't do Birth by Sleep again just because it's so repetitive. Will you do Chain of Memories, or are you just gonna buy 2.8 and just play that?
No, I don't feel like doing Chain of Memories right now. I'm not in the card combat mood, honestly. Plus that story again with the repetition, like, so much of the first portion of that game specifically is very repetitious, where it's like, let's go to all of these places again. And so that one very much, especially even more than Birth by Sleep has a repetitious factor to it. Plus, it's kind of a two-part game with the whole Sora's the first half and then Riku's the second half.
Yeah.
And I don't feel like playing both of those right now. So I'm probably not going to go to... I'm not going to go to that. If I go to anything else, it would be 2.8. But I'm not buying that for... Not for a while. I by the time I got to the end of Kingdom Hearts 2, I was getting a little Kingdom Hearts doubt. Like, so... Because I had put...
Say it ain't so.
Probably 60, 65 hours into that series across the course of, like, 2.5, 3 weeks. So...
Not enough.
I mean, you gotta... I played those games... I played those games originally over the course of like years. Now I just piled them both into like 1 month. I'm not sick of it. Like I could go play Chain of Memories or something right now, but there's other stuff out that I need to get to. Like me going back and playing those old games in 2017 when there's 1,000 other games out. I don't know. It just doesn't seem, I don't know. It's there. Like I can go back to it if I want to. If anything though, I will go get 2.8 at some point, probably gonna wait a month or two. And then I'll jump into Dream Drop. And then I'll probably save 0.2 for last.
Yeah, you should. Just you should beat because. Dream Drop before 0.2. That's my recommendation.
Yeah, that's what I'm planning on. I did look at some of the bonus stuff with 358, though, because I hadn't really played that game before. And I read all of the journal entries.
Oh, okay.
And some of like, the
bonus stuff. There's no the videos for that.
No, there's not. There actually was on the PS3 version, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, not on PS4. So I read some of the journal entries and things like that and familiarized myself with Xion and people like that. Like, I had no idea who that was, and that just complicates everything a little bit more. But
what?
She's
Kingdom Hearts, complicated,
really not,
convoluted.
She doesn't really serve much of a purpose to the plot in the end. Like, her effect isn't felt on 2 and... I know she shows up like in Dream Drop, like in like montages or whatever, in quick scenes. But I doubt she'll play any role in 3. So I don't
huge.
Feel like I'm
she
missing
plays
out
a
on
huge
that.
Role in 3.
And then I looked at Recoded, and then I laughed, and I jumped back to my PlayStation menu, and I closed the game.
What? Laughing at a game about hacking Jiminy's journal? You're crazy.
The cool thing is when you beat those games, though, they give you special. Themes for your PS4.
Yep.
So that's kind of cool.
They did that in 2.8. So if you would
so
beat
yeah,
it.
So yeah, I beat 1 and 2, and I have specific themes for both of those. I wish it played like Dearly Beloved in the background, though, so it's not a dynamic. It's like a halfway dynamic theme where when you move the cursor around, it makes the cursor noises from Kingdom Hearts, but it doesn't play like Kingdom Hearts music in the background or anything
like that.
Yeah,
it's not
that.
Like,
so
it's not like the Firewatch one or the Persona 5 ones more recently.
Yeah, so that kind of sucks, but anyway.
What have you been
playing?
Anything
going
else?
Back to that. Prey, jumped into that yesterday. I got that over the weekend. I'm only about 90 minutes in, but I'm digging the vibe of the game so far. The soundtrack is awesome. The opening is cool. If you don't know what's up with the opening, then don't look into it. It really flips itself on its head really quickly.
I haven't played the demo yet. It's downloaded on my Xbox. So I just haven't played it.
The demo, I'm trying to think. Yeah, the demo would probably be pretty good.
It's that first hour, so you're only 30 minutes past it.
Give or take. I'm enjoying it, though. I don't really know how to speak to the combat yet. It hasn't been great, but at the same time, all I have is a wrench, so...
Hey, what other famous game do you start with a wrench?
I mean, you get a pistol pretty quickly in BioShock.
It's been years since I played.
But I only have a wrench so far, and a glue. I have a gun, but it's a glue gun, and it just freezes enemies in place, to where you can then go and beat them up with the wrench. So that's cool. But I haven't done anything else so far. It's once you get past, I would assume I haven't played the demo, but I assume I know where the demo ends. And then once you get past that point, the game really opens up, and I've just kind of taken my first few steps into that more open portion of the game. And it's cool. I like it so far. Again, the soundtrack's freaking cool. That's one of my favorite parts so far. Mick Gordon did a really good job with that. I think he was involved with that a little bit.
Same guy from Doom?
Same guy who did Doom. And then what else? The story is cool. I reached one of the first big like plot points of the game, and started unearthing a little bit of what's going on.
Unearthing because you're in outer space.
Because what?
Unearthing because you know space. Earth.
That was really bad.
I never said my jokes or puns were good. I never said that.
It's I'm liking it though. Like I'd like to play it a little bit more tonight if I have some time. I don't know if I do, but good thumbs up from me so far. It's about what I expected though. My pants haven't been blown off yet, but I'm still really not far enough into the game to really say anything drastic one side or the other. I will say, however, Arkane Studios, this is more up my alley. Because I've talked about how them and Dishonored is just one of those things that doesn't click with me, and I don't know what it is. I think it's a combination of the setting. I'm not a huge fan of the steampunk. The gameplay is great. The game design is phenomenal. But there's just a lot of things specifically that don't click with me with that game. And I think the way Prey is doing this so far is much more up my alley in terms of the setting, the genre with the sci-fi horror type stuff. And then, it's a lot of it's the genre, I think, honestly.
You're more we'll space see fan than how it goes. I don't even know what you would
classify. Yeah, Dishonored's just, I don't know, something about Dishonored just doesn't jive with me. So, and I don't even think it's bad, it's just like that's the thing, I don't even hate Dishonored, it's just kind of like a series I have played. Think of it too often, like in the annals of the great games I've played in my life. But yeah, Prey's good so far. I'm really looking forward to playing more later tonight if I have time, if I don't pass out because I stayed up till 3 a.m. watching the freaking Cubs play last night.
I saw, and you were mad.
They went 18 innings. It was really fun. But yeah, I'll report back once I know more about Prey. I think that's all I've been playing.
Probably.
Yeah. I've got Persona. I need to install that, but we'll see when I do that.
I miss Persona. I need to get back to it. Stupid graduation.
News. Let's get into news. We got a lot of it this week. This is going to be a majority of the show. There's a lot to go over. Max has only got like an hour or so we're going to crush all this together. Let's start off with some of the shorter things, Max. To begin, Sony's E3 conference time. Big shocker. Monday night, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. I think it's a little later than normal, if I'm correct. Isn't it usually around like 7 or 8?
Nope.
9 seems later. No, it's just that it's in the summer, so the sun's out later, I think. So
It's definitely like still 9 o'clock Eastern time, because I remember going out to my movie theater the past 3 years, and it's always that late, so...
Well, be sure to give me your MLB The Show code that they're going to probably give you.
If they do, you'll be the sole person who gets it.
So not a huge shock there. Everybody knew about that. See if I can go to that. Cool. So to line them all up now, and I guess to kind of go along with the conversation I brought up before the start of the show. We'll just run down the gambit now out of ones that have been announced. EA Play, their keynote address is at 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, June 10th. Mm-hmm. Microsoft this year, again, is on Sunday. They have shifted to Sunday this year rather than that early Monday morning slot. They are doing theirs at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on Sunday, June 11th. Bethesda's time has yet to be announced, I feel like they did announce it.
I was looking before the show. I was starting to punch this in my calendar. Bethesda has not announced the time yet.
Okay. So they sent out their invites, but they haven't done the time yet. Or that carnival theme thing that they sent out to a few people. And then Sony's now at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
Sure Ubisoft's will be sometime that Monday as well. Monday's going to feel a lot lighter. Because EA and...
I think it'll be nicer, though, honestly.
Oh, I'm sure. Just a little breathing room. But yeah, EA and EA and Microsoft won't be on that Monday, so...
So yeah, I guess it will just be Yubi and Sony.
Mm-hmm. Really interesting.
It may feel a little bit different. I won't know. I mean, this is the weirdest, this is the most different E3 year, I think, in terms of scheduling ever, but I won't have any point of reference in comparison to other years just because I'll be there. So everything will be so much different, really, for that. Before we move on to the next story, though, I wanted to talk about our E3 plans and our E3 predictions shows, because I know you and I were talking about this beforehand, or we were texting about this the past week.
Text.
And I think we have a plan in place, but at the same time, I wanted to talk to you about this. So our plan currently was to start next week with E3 predictions, mm-hmm. which means next week we would do a different company every week leading up to E3 and maybe combining the third parties together into one. So that means we would do an episode with Xbox, one with Sony, one with Nintendo, and then obviously throw Ubisoft, EA, and Bethesda in the mix. I think it's too early. I really do. I think that we're going to get a lot more announcements over the next 2 or 3 weeks alone. And I want to talk to you about this.
That's the problem.
I think a lot of developers have yet to show their hands.
Well, that's kind of the thing when you start in so early, is things will be confirmed or leaked beforehand.
Yeah. Like, I think we're going to get a lot more news within the next 2 weeks specifically. And because of that, I think it might be a bad time for us to do it. And even if we have to make, you and I can talk about this off air. We don't have to obviously figure it out all here. Maybe we just do one really, really long episode one day and just throw that up.
It's just so
Which you long. Hate, but you can suck it up, or maybe Better Call Saul won't be on that week or something like that.
Saul's always on.
I don't know. We'll figure it out. But as soon as we came up with that idea the other day, I started thinking about it a little bit more throughout the day. And I was like, it's actually probably not a good idea.
I would prefer, like, if we could just block like three chunks out, or just do three separate podcasts in like one day. Like, I would just prefer it not to be one mega episode. I would just prefer it not be
all in one place.
No, I would like, if you want to hear our Xbox stuff, you go to this Xbox episode. That's my only thing.
That's why we have timestamps.
Yeah.
That's why we have timestamps, though.
But timestamp.
Magic of writing words and show notes.
But a 3-hour podcast is daunting. Daunting download.
As we go along. But, well, again, I don't want to have predictions for X, Y, and Z, and then it's like, oh.
No. I'm saying, we'll talk about this off air. We're going to talk about this off air. I'll explain myself better. Off air. Alone.
We can do it now.
Together. Just you.
To go along with E3, the sequel to Pokemon Colosseum has been announced. E3 Colosseum is coming to convention centers in Los Angeles near you this June 12th through the 15th. E3 Coliseum. So Jeff Keighley this past week announced this.
I feel like he has a new project every E3. Like, he has a new way to do E3 every year.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's got to pay the bills somehow. So he does this stuff because he doesn't have an everyday job at Game Trailers or whatever anymore that he's doing.
What does he do?
So,
yeah, what does he do in between the 6 months of Game Awards in E3?
He's just very well off.
He just hangs out with Hideo Kojima? Just hangs out?
I've thought about this in a lot of depth. Like, I really have. Like, what does he do? And obviously, he puts together big things like this. He does a lot more.
I mean, he spends months planning this.
I don't want to theorize about Jeff's job. He probably does a little bit of consulting, if I had to guess.
I don't know. Maybe I'll interview Jeff.
Maybe I'm totally wrong. Yeah, he probably does whatever he wants. Anyway, so at E3 this year, he's hosting this thing called E3 Coliseum. It's happening on the 13th and 14th of June at E3. So basically, this is going to be panels. Convention where developers or other notable people within the industry will come up on stage with him and talk to him about their game or something like that. I mean, I can read his exact words here if you'd like. Today, I am excited to announce E3 Coliseum. I'm teaming up with E3 to bring the culture of games to life through 2 days of panels, conversations, talks, and other surprises. For the past 6 months, we've been quietly working with all the major game teams to create special presentations that will take place at the Novo at LA Live on Tuesday, June 13th and Wednesday, June 14th. Thousands of fans will get to attend in person. If you aren't at E3, the sessions will stream live around the world. Alongside presentations from game developers, we will also welcome some very special guests from the broader entertainment world. They'll join us to speak about the cultural significance. So anyway, look for really cringeworthy celebrity cameos like Snoop Dogg smoking weed or something like that. Anyway, sounds like it's just going to be panels and discussions that he's going to be having at E3. Sounds like something for fans to do, for those who potentially bought tickets and decided to go, unless they really want to wait in line 3 hours to play Federation Force 2, I guess, would be the big game on the show floor this year. But yeah, I don't know. Seems more fan focused, I think, than it is press. Like,
it reminds me,
be on my radar at all.
It reminds me of kind of what you just said, fan focused, like a PSX or a PAX, like panels are kind of really the key word there. And it's going to be, Jeff definitely has some pull, and I think he's going to have some pretty interesting guests on those panels and to spark interesting discussions. And those will be, as someone who's staying at home at least, I think those will be very interesting to watch or read about after they happen. I'm not sure how they pertain to the people actually there, because I feel like people there are going to be focused on the games and the news of that. But you know, for all we know, we could see the like fifth Death Stranding trailer, and then Jeff has Hideo on for a cool panel, or you know,
there wouldn't be anything crazy like that.
I know. I just made that up. It was an obviously we're not going to see.
No, I know. Well, that's what I was. No, I know. I know that was a joke. I'm just saying. I don't think there will be any big reveals of anything at this.
I thought like Sony has a new trailer, and then Jeff later has Hideo on his show to talk about whatever.
I get what you're saying. Yeah. So like Monday night, Sony will be like, and you can hear more about Spider-Man PS4 with Jeff Keighley.
Boom.
Wednesday at 5 o'clock with Ted Price or something.
Yeah, you
like
know
that.
What I'm. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, something is announced at a press conference, and then Jeff has a panel about it. Or he could go the route more of like a PAX or GDC, where it's panels pertaining to a topic within the industry. I don't know how that would jive with E3, but it could. It'd be interesting. So as someone who's
watching
from home, it'll
be cool. I think
it'll
do well for the people like that's what I was going to say. I think people like yourself at home who like want to feel like they're a part of that experience, I think that'll be good for you. I know myself, as a person who is going this year, I will not be around this at all. Like, not because I think it's a bad idea or anything like that, but just because it's like, I came to go to E3, and even though this is a part of E3, this is not really E3 to me, if that makes sense.
Kind of. Yeah.
I don't know. The E3 to me is being on the show floor and walking around and seeing the developers and seeing their games and going to play them and things like that. It's not about panels, and that's why they've never really done this before. So, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, if I'm out and about and I don't have a meeting or anything like that, and I can swing by and just see what's happening, and then I may go take a look over at it real quick, but it's nothing I'm going to like plot out time for. So we'll see. I'm sure you'll enjoy it though, as a person who's sitting at home. Let's go to Zelda DLC. So,
right, take me
Breath
there.
Of the Wild, first DLC pack. We got details on what will be coming in that this week. So this, as if you remember, the season pass, it's $20, right? $20 or $25?
$20. You get one pack here in the summer, and one in the winter.
So yeah, first one, we got details on that, and everybody knew this was going to be the lesser the two packs. The second one has the big notable piece of DLC, which is the story expansion, which we still don't know about. But yeah, this one, so they've got this thing called Trial of the Sword, which is a challenge where you face enemies in 45 different rooms total. And it says if you complete all 45 rooms, then the power of the Master Sword will be awakened. And it will always be in its glowing powered up state while usable. I'm going to assume that means that the double in power that it has will just be a permanent thing, which is kind of cool. So it'll have those 60 hit points.
I would have assumed no cooldown, like it doesn't run out of energy.
Potentially. I feel like that, I don't know. I thought the same thing originally, and then I thought about it a little bit more. Would that like break the game that you wouldn't need to pick anything up anymore?
Because that's like such a key element. I thought this only pertained to the room.
I from clear all the trials, and the power of the Master Sword will be awakened, and it will always be in its glowing powered up state while usable. So you can run around all of Hyrule.
Oh yeah, then it would be just its doubled 60 damage state.
Yeah. I feel like if it never broke, that would be really strange.
Well, that would totally.
But I guess that is its powered up state, is that it doesn't break. So
I don't know. I had it break in Hyrule Castle, so.
Well, I didn't have it break when I fought Ganon. I was smacking the snot out of him. There's also a couple new things. There's something called Hero Path Mode, which allows you to, it essentially traces where you've been all across the map over the last 200 hours of gameplay. So if you want to see how much of the map you've covered as you run around, it'll start to color all that in with your, I think, a little red line or something like that. You'll get to see all the places you've been. It's supposed to show maybe places you haven't been or roads you haven't been down. Maybe if you're looking for a specific shrine and you don't want to use the internet, be like, okay, I haven't looked over here yet, and then that'll lead you to that area, things like that. So that's a good idea. That's cool.
I thought it was pretty
and then we got more details on the hard mode, which is essentially just hard mode. enemies will gradually regain health. All enemies are also powered up by one level. So
if it was a red bokoblin, now it's a blue bokoblin.
Yeah, so as you progress through the game, you start to see how those guys are leveled up.
It did say there would be new enemy types as well.
It did?
Yeah, I was pretty sure I read that there was also like new enemy
types. I'm looking at it right now. All enemies are also powered up by one level. For example, red bokoblins can, in normal mode, are now blue bokoblins. Enemies can also have higher maximum levels than they would in normal mode. Look up, and you may also find enemies and treasure chests in the sky attached to the floating balloon things. Doesn't say anything there, at least, of new enemies on that section, and I didn't see it in the others as well.
I thought there was something.
So
maybe I was imagining it. Oh well.
Yeah, I didn't see anything about it in the other sections. Travel medallion. Somewhere in the world, there is a chest with a travel medallion inside. When you use this, you can register your current location as a fast travel point on the map. You can only register one location when using the fast travel medallion. So it's kind of like the fire from, I forget what it, Din's something from Ocarina of Time, where you can kind of like fast travel, but not really. It's different from that at the same time. Anyway, you can fast travel now. There's also a couple new masks and outfits. Majora's Mask is coming to the game, Midna's Helmet, Phantom Armor from Phantom, or no, what's the
Spirit
one with
Tracks.
Zelda where she'd be? Spirit Tracks, and then Tingle's outfits also in the game. There's also more armor that is coming. There will be treasure chests placed all around Hyrule where you can find this stuff. There's a Korok mask that will also show you where you can locate Korok seeds, or it'll make them easier to find. And your mask will start to shake as you near Korok seeds because there's 900 of those. So that'll help.
900.
So we ran all that down when we probably didn't need to. Thoughts, I guess?
I like the costumes.
Costumes look cool. I mean, it's about like I expected.
It's what I've...
Like, I don't know if I would buy this just on its own, but...
No, what I said kind of before when DLC was announced was I'll wait until the winter pack is detailed to see if I want it, because it's, you can't buy it piecemeal. It's all or nothing. And I'm assuming the winter pack is going to be pretty sweet with its new story and dungeon. So all this other stuff waiting for me in December is going to be pretty cool, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically where I'm at too. Like, I'm not going to, this is not making me want to jump back in right now. Or if I did want to jump back in, it wouldn't be for this content specifically, I guess. So I'll wait it out too. We'll see what else comes out later this year. And I think when I do eventually, I assume I will buy the pack eventually. I'll have all of this stuff plus whatever's in the second pack, and that'll be cool. But as it is right here, I don't think this is, like you said, you can't piecemeal buy them anyway, but even if you could, like, I just don't think there's anything here too substantial. While there is a bunch of cool new additions, like, you typically see some of these additions as just like free updates to other games anyway. So I don't know. It's not bad though. Like, it's honestly more than I expected, but still not a lot.
It's cool. I want that Tingle suit and that Majora's Mask.
The Tingle suit looks so bad.
It's so funny.
So bad. Sticking with Nintendo. Mario Cross Rabbids RPG is real and it's coming to Switch, according to Jason Schreier, game canceller.
But he's we've heard about the this. Game exists. Past. Is he canceling this one too?
I would hope so. Like, please, if you're out there. So they've seen footage, they've seen art assets of it at this point that have been sent to Kotaku. They asked them not to share them with the public. So
I feel like though we haven't seen it. Jason and Kotaku's track record that I trust them.
Yeah, well, the headline is the rumored Mario Cross Rabbids RPG is real. Like, they wouldn't say that unless they knew for sure. So yeah. Most of those bigger sites typically don't say things like that unless they're true, or unless you're IGN and you've claimed that The Last Guardian has been canceled.
IGN Italy, but this, I'm so sorry.
This, dang it, Jason Hayward went to the DL. I don't know how I feel about this.
It's real, which isn't surprising because we've heard so many rumors about it. This is going to be one of their reveals at E3. And I think I've heard rumors of an August release on this game. So yeah. That would be their kind of big type of deal. It could be pretty interesting. I feel like the Rabbids are just the minions of the video game world. And they're quite...
Yeah.
I've played more Rabbids games than I probably would have cared to because my friend Landon loves them. And they're cool mini-game kind of party games and have some fun stuff in it. But, you know, I look at the Rabbids like I look at Minions and kind of cringe a little bit. But it could be done right with Mario and some RPG stuff in it. Could be interesting. I don't know. We'll see.
See, like, my hope hinges on the word RPG, but then I started thinking a little bit more about bad RPGs that have used the Mario license, and then I'm like, feeling so hot about this now that I think about it. Like, originally when I heard about it and just the prospect of what games could come to the Switch, I was kind of excited, but honestly, like, there are some bad Mario RPGs out there, or at least some very lackluster ones. So I mean, I'm hoping it fits into the category of
the last two Mario the better ones. Games, the Paper Mario games. What other Mario RPGs?
I mean, there's really only a Legend of the Seven Stars. There's Paper Mario 1 and 2, and then
Super Paper Mario, Sticker Star.
Think the Mario and Luigi series is like 6 or 7 games long at this point.
It's there's 5. The Game Boy, the DS, there's the 2 5? On the DS, and 2 on the 3DS. Yeah, there's 5 Mario and Luigi games.
Superstar Saga, Partners in Time, Bowser's Inside Story, Dream Team, and then Paper Jam?
Paper Jam, yeah.
I thought there was one more. Nope. But maybe that is it. That's there's it. 5 of those. There's about 3 or 4
there's Paper 5 Mario Paper games Mario that are games.
Art. Yeah, but Super Paper Mario is not really an RPG, so... Kind of four of those, Paper Mario, biggest Legend of the Seven Stars. Yeah.
And then 7 Stars. So, but those are all in-house with no third-party stuff added to it. I don't know. It's going to be interesting, obviously.
Still, well, my point is, like, in my head, when I think Mario and RPG, my head naturally goes to, like, the happiest place. Like, oh, yeah, that can't fail. And then I think about it a little bit more. I'm like, no, that can fail. So... I don't know. I'm hopeful. I think there's. I don't know. We'll see. Yeah, I'm not a fan of the Rabbids. I wish they were crossing over with just like flat out Rayman or something like that. That'd be way cooler. But we'll see what this turns into. I mean, it could be a good Switch game.
Very, we'll very skeptical.
Find out shortly. I'm very sure we will find out soon, one way or the other. Like within the next month, probably.
What?
There's a couple other stories this week, so a lot of stuff to go through. Let's go through this strange-ish one first. We'll keep Darksiders for last. So this is a story this week that I added to the doc that not really many people have been picking up, mainly because there's nothing newsworthy to report here.
Nothing to talk about, per se?
There's nothing. Yeah, there's nothing that like a gaming site would really write up on this because no direct information has been given. However, this is like a good story, I think, for us to theorize and talk about here. So in Montana, there was a group that was shooting a video for an upcoming video game, and it's going to be it's promotional material for the game, and they would not say what company they were shooting it for, but they're using a church. They said that the game is in the old – did they say it's in the Old West setting? Anyway, they said this is a sequel to an existing global franchise and that the game is releasing in September of this year, and it has yet to be announced. They were shooting at a church in Montana on a hill with the sunset in the background.
I mean,
it's very much the scene they're shooting is very much old Western looking. And plus the other piece of notable news, I guess, is that the company who is shooting this has worked with Ubisoft in the past. So there's that relationship there. So this has led people to believe that it is a Ubisoft game, which then is leading people to believe it's Far Cry, but we can get into that, I guess, in a second.
It sounds like one of these quick turnaround games, if it does, in fact, A, come out September 2017, and obviously hasn't been announced yet. If it's announced at E3, that's like a three-month turnaround, which is unprecedented for a AAA game. I think
it's going to be announced much sooner, like next 2 weeks.
Very well could be. Still, that's a four-month turnaround. It's still incredibly unprecedented for a AAA game, I think. Would you agree with that? Like, a AAA game to be announced and then out 4 months later, supposedly?
Yeah, I mean, not as unprecedented as it was maybe 2 or 3 years ago. Like, I could see it now. Like,
I think you could see it now because of Fallout 4, and it's five-month turnaround.
World War II just got announced the other day. That's out in November.
Well,
I mean,
Call of Duty games are always announced. I don't know.
Assassin's Creed's not announced yet. We know that's coming. It is a more regular thing now, I will say.
Yeah. I would lean toward a Far Cry more than anything. Because what else does Ubisoft have?
I mean,
that's a established global franchise that...
That it is a sequel to.
Yeah, so...
See, that's the thing. Like, when you read this at first and you read that it's a sequel to a game coming out in September and then it's Old West, you're like, oh, okay, that's obviously Red Dead. And then they said it's a has-yet-to-be-announced title. And you're like, I don't know anymore.
I mean, I think, in my head, if I was Ubisoft after Far Cry 4... So Primal was well into development. Or, like, you know, they were in pre-development when 4 was released. Or, you know, those ideas, that game was in motion. But there probably was a team designated, like, we need to work on the next Far Cry. You know, the big numbered sequel or whatever. And around that time period, you know, something they hadn't done. They'd done a tropical island. They'd done, you know, the Middle East, Southeast Asia. And I think a Western was untouched. Obviously for that franchise, and also, you know, games kind of...
You're sleeping on Red Steel, too, though, from Ubisoft.
Is Red Steel Ubisoft?
But which was a Western.
That was a Wii launch game, right?
I'm kidding. No, it was a... It came a few years after the Wii. Red Steel 2.
Okay.
So the second
but
one.
But then, I think the gaming industry tends to kind of lean in the same direction, even though these companies don't talk to each other. And what I mean by that is look at Battlefield and Call of Duty. World War II has been in development for the past 3 years. They've been, you know, Sledgehammer's been locked away working on their game, and then DICE came out with Battlefield 1 last year, which is a World War I game. Or you look at how Rock Band and Guitar Hero came back the same year. Like, those companies weren't talking to each other. And my correlation here is I think Far Cry 5 is like a Western would be really cool. There hasn't been a great Western game in quite some time since arguably Red Dead 1, and... Rockstar says Red
Dead
2 is
arguably like the only good Western game.
Exactly. Like, and then I would say Samurai Western's pretty good, but it's been a long time since I've played that game. That's a story for a different
time. I have no idea what that is.
It's bad, but in a good cheesy way. And so I think maybe Far Cry was like a Western would be really interesting for the Far Cry franchise. And then obviously Red Dead's coming. They say this year, I think Red Dead's going to be pushed, but you know, there are two big open world Western games coming out. I think that's logical, given.
Okay,
what
so
we know.
So let's say this. Let's just assume 100% that this is Far Cry. Okay, so this is Far Cry, and it is going to be a Western Far Cry, which everybody's running away with already, or not everybody. Again, big sites aren't reporting on this, but smaller sites are. And I found this site clicks. I found this story via Reddit. So let's assume that this is the next Far Cry for a minute, and I want to go ahead and make a couple predictions. One, this is not Far Cry 5. I said this before we went on the air, but if this is a Far Cry game, I think they step away from the numbered entries, because it just makes sense. Like if they did a spinoff with Primal, I think it makes more sense to do a spinoff as well with.
I think sequels sell though. This numbers, old West numbers one. Sell. That's why Destiny no, 2 is I, called I really, Destiny 2.
I think the name, the brand Far Cry, just the name. Like you don't need a 5 attached to that. And the other reason I say it's not 5 is because at least with the numbered entries, there is a semblance of continuity to them where it is all modern. It is all on an island or a situation. The second one takes place in freaking Africa. The first and the third take place on islands, and then the other two take place in closed off open areas. But they all are modern shooters. They all feel the same, at least in the way they play. Like you could say that all of those took place at the same time period, and I don't really think that would be a stretch. Like they all seem to take place around the same time. However, they have done Blood Dragon, which is future spinoff. Hilarious. They've done Primal now, which is a past spinoff, and then I think it just makes sense. Like seeing how they did those two spinoffs with different genres, and then seeing how they could potentially do an older Old West one. I just don't think it makes sense to make it 5. So it'll be Far Cry subtitle something. If I had to take a guess, the other thing I guess I want to mention is that if it is Far Cry is a great franchise, and it has a lot of staying power and draws a lot of people in. Like people would be super jazzed if this was a Far Cry game. Unfortunately, if they release anywhere near Red Dead Redemption 2, then the comparisons will be drawn no matter how different the games may be. And I'm sorry, Far Cry, no matter how good this Far Cry game would be, and I have no doubt that it would be awesome, it is not going to be as good as Red Dead Redemption 2. And that may be, you may say like, well, Logan, how can you say that before either of the games came out? There's just a track record with Rockstar. Like everybody and their mother knows that that game is going to be phenomenal. I think releasing two Old West games at the same time or around the same time when we hardly see many Old West games in the first place, they're going to be compared to one another regardless.
Oh,
similar to how no doubt. Uncharted and Tomb Raider are compared or something like that. And so because of that, I wonder if people are going to see Far Cry and instead wait for Red Dead or choose to play Red Dead instead if they do come out near the same time. Like I wonder what that dynamic would be if they come out within a month or two of each other.
I mean,
because if Red Dead comes out or if Far Cry comes out a month or two before Red Dead, are you really going to want to play two back-to-back open world Western games?
Yeah, no, people will, they could come out on the same day. Everyone, your Far Cry fans will buy your Far Cry, but everyone's going to buy a Rockstar game.
Yeah,
it's
especially since there's so few and far between as well. Like Rockstar releases
exactly.
a new game
every five. This is not going to stop. This isn't going to slow down Red Dead sales at all.
Oh, it's not going to stop Red Dead sales, but I'm wondering if in turn Red Dead will hurt this. I want to say yes.
Red Dead would hurt this more than anything.
So again, we don't know what it is.
It's fun speculation
seems like
time.
I mean, the only other thing I could think would be Assassin's Creed, but an Assassin's Creed in the Old West would make sense, but we know that's in Egypt this year. Like, that is
been confirmed. Thanks, Jason Schreier.
Thanks, dudes who send leaked documents and hold their laptops open on subways or whatever.
Holding laptops open on subway was Tomb Raider.
Yeah, that was Tomb Raider. The one before, the Black Flag was on an airplane. Somebody had it open. So there's all kinds of stuff that happens with this. But Far Cry makes sense. I'd like to be proven wrong, though, honestly, because I don't want
what
Far
other
Cry
established
right
franchise?
I love Far Cry, but I want that series to rest for a little bit and then come back like maybe late next year, early 2019 or something like that. Like I'd like to see them let that chill for a little bit.
But what?
What else could it be?
Yeah, what sequel would it be?
I mean, I think we're so locked in on Far Cry. I think we're so locked in on Far Cry at this point that that's all we're seeing.
But the, okay, if like but a what Ubisoft established Ubisoft franchises.
Again, it doesn't have to be Ubisoft. That's just the correlation we've drawn.
That's
because
fair.
This company has worked with Ubisoft in the past.
For all we know, it's Red Dead.
For all we, I mean,
could be.
They
could
said
be
it's a has yet to be announced game. That's the only hiccup with that.
Yeah,
otherwise, all signs in the before. World point. All signs in the world point to it being Red Dead, except for that one caveat.
Yeah.
So,
who knows?
We'll see. It's maybe the story's just
fun speculation time.
Fake news. Maybe the story is wrong. It is Red Dead anyway. We talked about a Western Far Cry for way too long. Last thing this week. Holy crud, Darksiders 3 was announced. I mean, this is a really... I did not see this coming at all. So Darksiders 3 is coming out next year. It's now has the titular character of Fury. I guess it's not titular because her name is not Darksiders 3. The character this time around, the next horseman of the apocalypse, is Fury. The first game featured war. The second one featured death. This one will feature Fury. So some of the ex-Vigil Games guys, the guys who made the first two games, are working on this. They're now with a development studio called Gunfire Games. The announcement happened last week. It kind of leaked a little bit early because it was supposed to be an IGN reveal, but the Amazon listing Amazon went up about 4 hours before IGN hit the go button to launch this and show it to the world. I just can't believe it exists. Like, I'm both ways. Like, I remember when THQ fell apart. So to catch those up to speed, if you didn't know, when THQ fell apart, this was one of their properties, and this was eventually sold off. And somebody bought it, and I didn't expect we'd see anything from it for a while, but I don't know. Like, I've always been curious about how the Darksiders games have sold, and I should probably go look into that. But I've always been of them. I've always thought that they were kind of niche. And I've enjoyed both of them. I'm going to take a wild guess that you have played neither of them, nor know anything about them.
I know you can ride a horse, and it doesn't go in places. Thanks, Brian. Alcano.
Sure. You can ride a horse, and it doesn't go in places?
I remember him freaking out that, like, you could take the horse into places it couldn't go, or was the other way? Like, you couldn't take a horse into a place where a horse should go. I can't remember.
Anyway.
I've never played these games. I recognize the box art, I think.
They're phenomenal. They're really good. They're
the box
really,
arts?
Really good games. They're Zelda games, pretty much. And like they have that formula to them, but they also have the hack and slash feel of a God of War or something like that.
This announcement didn't surprise me because I assumed when that property was sold, when THQ fell apart, that another game just, like, logically would come out. It's been a while.
Yeah, I mean...
So, like, I wasn't taken aback by it, but I also don't know anything or care about this franchise.
I guess I just, like, forgot it existed. Like, once THQ died, I was like, oh, rest in peace, Darksiders, and
well,
here it is.
Didn't Darksiders Definitive Edition just come out not long ago?
And then there's War Mastered Edition. So, yeah, both of them are on... recent consoles. So, I mean, they have been in the zeitgeist a little bit. I don't know. I just guess I mean, when people put remasters out more often than not, I guess they're testing the market to see how a sequel would go. But for some reason, I never picked up on it with Darksiders, and I have absolutely no idea why. I'm totally stoked to play this game, though. Like, the first two are really good. Max, I know you will not do this, but the first two are on sale right now for a combo pack on PS4 for $20.
Yep, won't like you do can it. I have $36 to my name.
$36 to your name?
Yep.
How do you function? I would be freaking out so bad.
I don't know. I'll buy gas here soon, and then I'll have like $10 in my name.
Anyway, they're very good games that you should play at some point.
Probably
like
will
seriously,
never
you would like both of them though. Like they're very, and I don't know how the remasters are. I don't know how they've aged, but at the time on 360, like they were both really good. I like the first one more than I like the second one. The second one added more RPG elements that I didn't think were bad, but I think it just overcomplicated the game to a point where it wasn't as hack and slashy as I wanted it to be. But yeah. they're both really good games, and I'm totally stoked to see this come out next year. It's coming out in 2018. No specific window or early or late or anything like that, but it will be out in 2018. You should play the first two. You really should. They're both great games that you would enjoy a bunch. I know it because they are Zelda games. It's like Zelda and God of War had a child and this popped out. They're both really good.
Or
anyway, say,
Zelda. Like Kratos just yelling at Zelda. And then they...
No, it would be like... Plus Mark Hamill's in it, so that's cool too.
Mark Hamill's in it. See, now you've piqued my interest. What's he do?
Well, what do you think he does?
Like, is he the main character? Is he the bad guy? What is he?
He's a voice actor.
I know he's a voice actor, but who does he voice act?
A character in the game.
Ugh, you're being difficult.
I'm not being... What do you want me to do? Tell you everything about it? Go play the game.
Tell me the character. Is he the main character? Is he the villain? Is it just a side dude?
No, he's not the main character. He's one of the main characters.
Cool. That's all I need to know.
Cool.
That's all I was asking. Goodness gracious. He's the voice of Fire Lord Ozai.
He's what?
He's the voice of Fire Lord Ozai.
I don't know what you said. That's it for news this week. That's it for notable news. There's a lot of it. We'll see if we're right with the... I don't know. I just have a feeling like that one game's getting announced soon. Whatever it is. The secret game. We will be back in a moment, though, with topics for the week, or I guess topic for the week, and then we're going to get on out of here. So we'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to the show, ladies and gents. So topics this week. Topic, singular. We got to start just coming up with more of these beforehand. So my topic for the week deals with licensed music. And this is, as you can guess, inspired by something recently that happened. Guardians of the Galaxy 2 came out. Their use of licensed music in those movies is phenomenal. So I essentially just wanted to go over what are the best ways that licensed music has been used in video games, because obviously there's the obvious ones, like we could go with the Rock Bands or the Guitar Heroes or something like that, but that's almost a little bit too... Well, that's a little... Of course, like the whole game centers around that.
I think out of all of those, though, I mean, my bias is Guitar Hero 3, but I think Rock Band Beatles has to be like the arguably the best, just because... At that time, it was so hard to get Beatles music. Right?
Rock Band 2 had a good set list, I remember.
Well, I think Guitar Hero...
There's a bunch of them. I don't know.
Anyway.
I forget the set list to a lot of those games.
Guitar Hero 3 was the best. But,
honestly, I think Guitar Hero 3 was like my least favorite set list.
Oh, so cool.
I liked Rock Band more. I liked Rock Band 2's more.
Rock Band 2 was great.
I preferred, I think, Guitar Hero 2 a little bit more. I don't know. I can't remember all of those. Guitar Hero 3 wasn't bad. But the Rock Band games, I thought, had better set lists top to bottom. I mean, those are obvious because that's the game. The licensed tracks is like the whole game. That's the big draw of it. So other things, I guess, notable that stand out to you, and I already know the next one you're going to say, so just go ahead and say that too.
Tony Hawk Pro Skater?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
No, that is not what you knew I was going to say.
Oh, I totally did. Yes.
Darn it. Yeah, Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 through 3 in particular. Fantastic soundtrack.
I mean, when you think of those games, that's immediately what you think of, and I know you like those games.
I love them.
I mean, I like those games too, but I just played more of them probably than I did.
I played Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 way too much. I love those. Another one, Tales from the Borderlands. Great
Tales music. From the Borderlands. I totally forgot about that. Yeah.
Fantastic music selection.
Yeah, I forgot they did use licensed tracks in that. That's a good pick.
And the last one I was able to think of was Grand Theft Auto.
That was another obvious one to me, at least when I first started thinking about this as well.
Huge.
Just their use of the radio tracks and that. Yeah, that's always a big draw to those games as well, driving around and listening to the radio.
Need for Speed games are pretty good.
What'd you say?
Need for Speed games.
What did you say?
Need for Speed games.
Oh. Yeah, that's your area of expertise compared to me. So games that I thought of that I was trying to think of games that used it in unique scenarios, like Tales from the Borderlands is a good example where it's less about, it's less something that you activate within the game world and more of like a, something that's happening or around you, or it's setting, a song is setting a scene or something like that. Some of the more notable ones I thought of, I really liked how Bioshock Infinite used those older tracks and they redid them either with the Barbershop Quartet with God Only Knows by the Beach Boys, or with Clearance Creedwater Revival, CCR with Fortunate Son, how you hear that song through a tear and then you come back and then you go jump into another dimension and one of the characters knows that song, even though that song in the current, and it's so hard to explain. You hear that song and Booker says something along the lines of like, I don't think anybody's ever heard that song before. And then you jump into another dimension and like, there's a lady on the street corner singing that song. And that, I thought that was really cool. Like in this timeline, she's the one who made that song up, or that song was made up before. Plus there's, when you jump into the 80s section of that game, for just like half a second when you jump into the, and there's the Revenge of the Jedi up on the outside the movie theater. That was cool. There's some cool uses with it in both Bioshock games. The Bioshock one's a little bit less notable with some of its older tracks, but I like those. I like how those shake down as well. Fallout is another notable one with the older music tracks from the 30s, 40s era, that era, and how they utilize the music in that is the best. Like I love so many old tracks now because of that, and again, that's just kind of a radio feature. And then there was one more that I had in my head and I can't remember what it was.
Elite Beat Agents.
There's licensed tracks in that.
That's the whole game. You dance into like popular music, like there's Earth, Wind and Fire, and what's that band you were telling Michael about the other day? Jamiroquai. That one. They're in there. And the YMCA song's in there. Oh, the whole thing is fantastic. It's a great set list.
Potentially my favorite one. Especially over the last few years when you think about it. Metal Gear Solid 5. The way they utilize the licensed tracks in that game is so cool, because you'll be running around a fortress or something like that, or an outpost, and you'll just hear...
Where the kids like, in America.
You'll hear it off in the distance. You'll hear something very far off, and you're like, I know there's a tape around here. I know there's a tape. And you'll start running around, and the music will get louder, and you don't know where it's at. And finally, you find the tape. And then, of course, then you can set it to do cool things. Like Michael and I talked about how we loved setting, like, Take On Me as, like, our elevator or as our helicopter pickup song or something like that. So that's coming in and land in the hot zone and landing, and it's blasting Aha as it does. And it, like the way that the 80s music in that game was utilized was just so freaking cool. And I really, really enjoyed it. And it added a whole extra layer to that game that I didn't know just simple, well-known music tracks could. Plus the opening with The Man Who Sold the World, that whole opening hospital sequence is really cool with that song behind it. Kojima knows when to utilize music in his games, and he pulled it off really well in that one. So,
real quick,
those are a few off the top of my head.
Did you like the soundtrack in Guardians 2 more than Guardians 1?
Because
I lean toward the first as far as soundtrack goes.
Well, the first, there's a lot more recognizable tunes, I will say, and I think that's why the first one did so well, was that most of the songs, I think, in that first, whatever it's called, Awesome Mix Volume 1.
Soundtrack, yeah.
I think most people knew those songs, and it was just like they were being reintroduced to them. the second one, there was even songs that I wasn't really aware of that I had heard like before, but wasn't like super aware of, and I couldn't point it out to you. They're both good. The way they're utilized in the movies is what's key, though, and I think that's why they're both good. I don't know. It's just that feel and that vibe of the music from that era that I think makes those movies work so well. But I don't know. Like I said, I know more from the first movie, so I'd lean towards that one, I guess. But I think the second one's pretty darn good, too.
It was good. Good music.
But yeah, that's. I mean, I wish I could think up more. Because I know there is. I know there are portions of games where like specific songs are used at specific points. And I can't really think of that off the top of my head right here. I mean, we thought up a couple. Like you said, Tales from the Borderlands was a good example. But I can't think of too many others right now as I'm sitting here. And I thought about it a little bit before we came in.
I can't either. Leapied Agents was my last kind of epiphany, as it were. Great game. Great soundtrack.
I guess the only other thing I'd say is annually, the MLB The Show soundtrack's pretty good. They're playing while you navigate the menus and stuff like that. It seems like every year there's a couple songs that come out on that, and I'm like, I have no idea what this song is. And then a few months later, it's like on the radio constantly. I'm like, well, wow.
MLB setting the stage.
MLB knows what's up. They can pick the top 40 hits before anybody else. Like some songs that have just absolutely blown up over the last few years, I heard first through that game, funny enough. So there's always good soundtracks to most of those sports games. Like NBA 2K is always really good too, and so is Madden, and so is I don't know how it is anymore, but back in the day, like late 2000s or what is that first decade of called?
What? You mean like 2001 the first 10 to years 2010?
Yeah. What is that called?
I don't know.
That era. The WWE games during that time had some really good soundtracks to them too that I really enjoyed, like 3 Days Grace and like a bunch of emo bands
They were really good. Emo bands.
Just what hard rock was at that time, the Linkin Parks and the things like that. So yeah, those were good at the time. But yeah, licensed music and
Tony Hawk Pro Skater music stuck in my head.
That is it for episode number 92 of the Millennial Gaming Speak podcast. Thank you so much for listening to us this week, as you do every week. I hope you completed your homework assignment last week. I meant to remind you of that at the top of the show. And if you didn't, I will give you an extra week to complete it. I won't take grades yet. But you can find the show on modelcitizensmedia.com. We are a part of Model Citizens Media. You can go listen to our other shows. We've got Reeling in the Years, where we haven't recorded a new episode in a little bit, but we'll be back tomorrow night on the YouTubes recording that. You can listen to the Model Citizens show, and you can listen to Behind the Pixel, which is Max's interview show. So you can find all of those over on modelcitizensmedia.com. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow this show on Twitter at MGS Podcast. You can follow Max on Twitter. He is at Max the White. You can follow myself on Twitter. I am MoreMan12. You can also follow the Model Citizens brand at Model Pods on the Twitters. So go do that. Go hit follow on all four of those accounts. We would appreciate it. You can email the show at mgspodcast@gmail.com with any questions, comments, or concerns that you may have. Let us know what you think the secret game is that those people were shooting video for. Let us know what you think about Darksiders 3, because Max was pretty much like talking to a brick wall with that game. And
I was, because what's a Darksider?
You should go play it.
Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon?
What'd you say?
I said, is it Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon?
No, there's like one word in common there, or two, I guess. You can also find us on Stitcher, Google Play, and iTunes, where you can leave us reviews. We would very much appreciate it if you could go do that. That helps us get the show in more people's ears. Seriously, I tell you to do all these things at the end of every episode. If you could leave us a review, 5-star review, that would be the best, especially on iTunes. So if you have a spare moment and you can just jump over to iTunes and go to our page, we would really appreciate it. Other than that, that is it for episode number 92 of the Millennial Gaming Speak podcast. Thanks so much for joining us this week. We'll be back next week with episode number 93. And Until then, friend Max and myself, thank you very much. We love you. Have a good week. Bye-bye.
Farewell.